You see, this hat, its origin really didn't start from some big cattle rancher in Texas. It's really started by one of the deadliest diseases in the world, and we're going to talk about it today. Howdy, my name is Kent Rawlings. I've been a cowboy and a chuck wagon cook for over 30 years, cooking for ranches all across America. You might have seen me on the Food Network or alongside my beautiful wife, Shannon, on our YouTube show, where we share cowboy cooking from the trail. But now we're going to take you behind the scenes to real campfire conversations. Join us as we share humor, cowboy wisdom, and stories full of history, heart, faith, and of course, a little fire. So grab you a cup of coffee, pull up a chair, and welcome to the podcast. Hey, thank y'all for joining us today, and we are fixing to blow your socks plumb off your feet with the information that we're going to give you today, because there was a disease that killed so many people, a disease that shaped not only America, but it helped shape the West. But one thing you really didn't know that I found very fascinating about it, it had something to do with the cowboy hat.
So, Kent, great introduction, because I started rabbit holing this. And the reason we got into tuberculosis, I almost accidentally picked up this book, Everything is Tuberculosis by John Green. And what fascinated me most is that, one, I had no clue really the impact of tuberculosis. I thought, this is like a disease of the 1800s. Why are we still talking about this? But more importantly, how it had this crazy connection of shaping the West and really American society. So we can't just talk about this ourselves.
No, we're going to have to bring in an expert.
We have to bring in an expert. And luckily, she is just down the road from us at Fort Stanton. We want to introduce Amy Hoffman. And you are the interpretive ranger for Lincoln and Fort Stanton historical sites here in New Mexico.
Yes.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
We were telling Amy, you are our first in-house guest in the podcast room.
It's very nice in here.
Do you like our setup?
Yes, it is a great setup.
So the reason we have you on, because you're perfect for this. One, you're close. You're at Fort Stanton, which is just, what, maybe 15 minutes from where we live. And Fort Stanton and New Mexico have this crazy history and tie-in with tuberculosis, right?
Yes, it does.
And I have here, Fort Stanton became one of the most advanced medical facilities in the country.
Yes, so we were one of the first federal tuberculosis centers. So we became one in 1899.
It's been a little bit.
Yes. And then that lasted until 1953. And then we became a state hospital after that. And we still were treating tuberculosis during that time.
And New Mexico, then for that reason, became a kind of tuberculosis hub or treatment center.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And also was really the reason that New Mexico became a state.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
Yes.
Now, Amy, before we get into this and your expertise, and you're going to give us all the interesting information that I know a lot of our listeners didn't know, because especially I didn't know.
Yeah.
But when I read this book, and this is what hooked me in the book, was these crazy connections to how tuberculosis built the West. And one particular character of importance was John Stetson. And this book made the mention that the reason the cowboy hat exists is because John got tuberculosis. Do you know this story?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I mean, one of the things out here is just so much sun.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, they wanted to treat tuberculosis, right, with the fresh air, the high altitude, with rest, with food. And when I've just moved out here, it's the sun. Like, that's what gets me.
Does it make you happy?
It does. It does make me happy. Right. But yeah, you need some protection.
Yeah.
Well, so John gets tuberculosis, and this is the big thing. So it's in, is he in New York, I believe?
Yeah.
He's in the East. I think it may be even New York City. And he gets tuberculosis, which many people at the time are getting, especially in urban areas.
Yeah. So those crowded conditions, right? To spread disease.
Yeah, with a lot more humidity and moisture in the air, you know, which makes it moist. But John B. Stetson, you know, people know that name when you talk about the hat. He incorporated cowboy hats into the American West.
So he goes over. So his doctor's like, oh, yeah, you've got tuberculosis. You need to get out of here, because that's what you were saying. Doctors are prescribing to go west.
Yes.
The arid air. So he heads west. Now, before he left, his family were hat makers. So that was kind of the family business. And once he gets out here, he's thinking, man, it's really bright. And the hat wear out here, it needs to be worked on. So he kind of restarts the hat business.
Yep.
And he creates a wider brimmed hat for the sunlight, a tall crown, because that keeps the heat off of your head, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really, those were the first workings of the cowboy hat.
Well, he got to noticing, you know, that, you know, ships' captains wore these little wool hats. They had these coonskin caps, many of the frontiersmen wore, but you had no protection from the elements. And when he made a cowboy hat, he wanted to make something wide brimmed that kept the sun out of your eyes, but also off the back of your neck. Mm-hmm. It worked as a great fan. He also said, you know, you can take this hat off. This makes a great bucket to water your horse.
Oh, is that
also,
true?
Yeah. But also,
I didn't know that.
It is, yeah, the brim itself, it makes a great cup for you to drink out of, you know? So when he was on his way out here, and he didn't have a job when he was coming west, and he needed something, he made one of his first hats out here in this country and sold to a guy who was pulling a big old team of oxen with a wagon, sold him a hat for $5, you know? So
great deal.
He done well, but his hats were so popular. Buffalo Bill Cody had one. Andy Oakley had one. Will Rogers had one. Presidents still wear them. The Texas Rangers wear Stetson hats. They were the only company that really decided, we're going to go with a hat that really symbolizes America.
That's crazy. So I guess we can say there was at least one good thing that came out of tuberculosis.
Oh, yes.
Was the cowboy hat and like the people that it brought west and created these different communities. Okay, Amy, can you help us, for those that don't know, because I sure didn't, break it down in like layman's terms, what is tuberculosis?
So tuberculosis, it's a bacteria, right? It really doesn't stay too long on surfaces, which is kind of nice. It's mostly spread by coughing.
Okay.
Right? Coughing, sneezing, in that sense. And so it was first discovered kind of as officially a bacteria in the 1800s, in the late 1800s, by Robert Koch. And he said, okay, this is, you know, what's causing it. Before then, TB was still around. We've seen in Egypt, right, bodies of spine, like the spines are kind of curved, like in an acute angle, and that's from POTS. And POTS is basically tuberculosis of the spine,
oh,
right?
What?
So researchers have, like, you know, kind of traced back, yeah, for a long time, like this has been a thing. And it's just kind of sometimes changed names over time. It's like white plague, consumption, really popular in the 1800s, right? And tuberculosis, it was termed probably 1830s, but it wasn't really used until the 1900s.
Yeah. When you had mentioned consumption, now that's the word I know, but I didn't know what that meant or what that was, because, like, Kent, I haven't watched a lot of old Western movies.
Oh, shame.
I'm sorry.
Cough up blood, you know?
But they always talked about consumption. I thought, well, that sounds bad, but I don't know what it is. So tuberculosis and consumption is the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a disease of the lungs.
Well, I guess they can go into other parts of the body too. Like I said, the spine, right? And then, like, curve those vertebrae. So it can go into other parts, but mostly it's going to be in the lungs.
Yeah.
And they called it consumption because really it just kind of consumes the whole body.
Yes. Yeah. You got very thin. Yeah.
It's just
kind of pale looking skin.
Is there a time that the disease lasts, or does it change for every person?
For Fort Stanton, most of the patients there, we would have about 200 a year when it was fully running. And then they would usually stay about a year.
Okay.
That was kind of the, and but we still had a third basically that would come in that would die.
There was an interesting fact that I saw that TB killed more Americans in the 1800s than most wars combined.
Yes. It's one of the top killers. It's still today a top killer.
Yeah.
That is what's crazy. Since you had mentioned that, I was looking at some statistics. In 2023, over 1 million people died. This isn't a disease of the 1800s. Unfortunately, as Westerners, we don't know it because we have the means to combat it, which we will get into later. But it really is a disease of poverty-stricken areas. Is that correct?
And we still see it today in the U.S. in mostly crowded conditions.
Okay.
Sometimes you'll see it in nursing homes, in prisons, right, where you have those kind of crowded areas. Because those diseases just love the lots of people in a small confined space.
Yeah. And even COVID, for a brief period of time, was the only disease that trumped it for a very short time.
Right.
And now TB is surging again as the top.
And what you were saying, you know, a little over 1 million die, but like 10 million get diagnosed, right? So it's still significant.
You know, when I think about getting boots, I always think, well, if it's a really good boot, it's going to be heavy, going to make me really tired to carry it all day. But when I pulled these Brunt work boots out of the box, they're put together well. I thought, these aren't as heavy as I thought they might be. And I love the option that you don't have to have a steel toe. You can get a soft toe. You can get a pull-on. You can get a lace-up. But when you put them on, they feel like they're handmade for your feet. They just feel good. And when you're on your feet all day like I am, that makes a big difference. I would really recommend that you try these boots, put them on, wear them, and put them to the test, because they're going to do the job. Stop overpaying for workwear that doesn't last. For a limited time, our listeners can get $10 off by going to bruntworkwear.com/cowboykent and using code cowboykent at checkout. This is a top-tier gear for an incredible price and with a risk-free trial. There's no reason not to give them a shot. Stop overpaying for workwear that doesn't last. For a limited time, our listeners can get $10 off by going to bruntworkwear.com/cowboykent and using code cowboykent at checkout. This is a top-tier gear for an incredible price. And with the risk-free trial, there's no reason you shouldn't give these boots a try.
So walk through us again why were doctors prescribing West?
So the big thing, in the late 1800s, right, Dr. Wyman, he was one that kind of made a big report at that time that said, hey, this is kind of a way to help the TB, right? It gives you we need fresh air. We need the high elevation. And then they started to really put in food, like lots of food, you know, as time went by too, give them lots of calories.
And so, and then
that report really, I think, pushed a lot of people here.
Because I know like Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, they saw a huge spike in populations.
Yes.
I think even the railroads had kind of created like these almost marketing campaigns to get people on them out west.
Yeah. And I know out here about 1880s, we got the railroad kind of here in New Mexico.
Okay.
And that was, yeah, could push more people here. Yeah.
You know, a lot of them, when I was looking back at stuff to try to find out what was going on, you know, they called them lungers. They called them health seekers, you know. And if a lot of them would come by wagon train,
mm-hmm.
that's the way they had. And little towns would sprout up because they couldn't go no further. They would just stop at these little towns, and there was tent shacks and everything else, you know. But it was a journey that them people made to try to better themselves, but also live longer. You know, I think they were chasing the dream of clean air, sunshine, mm-hmm. you know.
Right. So I had made a mention of this. Like, we think that the cowboys or the railroads or, you know, those settled the West. Well, maybe was it sick people that more settled the West? Like, was that more the reason for the population boom rather than just like, let's go and grab land?
Well, it's a complicated question in a way, because in 1850 is when New Mexico became a territory.
Yeah.
Right. We got a lot of land, right? Because it was modern day Arizona. It was here in New Mexico, right? And I think really there was a push to get people just out west, right? We started to really bring in those forts. Fort Stanton's was 1855, right? So in the 1850s, we started to bring out these forts. Really to control the Native American populations was their purpose, right? And so, but that brought a lot of people. And so you have those populations coming, right? You have these land grants, right? And they're really pushing people, like, get out west, come settle. Like, you can take this land, you improve it. Like, here's so many hundreds of acres.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we've got cattle. That's one of my favorite things, too. I think you like that, too, Ken. Right?
We'll give it away.
Right. You know, I think there was a big push really in the 1860s, 1870s, right? We've got John Chisholm, right, along the Pecos. He's bringing all those cattle through. Goodnight Loving Trail, right, going up.
Yep.
Then we've got, I always think of Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
Right? And he was a cattle rustler. That's mostly what he did out here when he around Lincoln. Right? And one fun fact I like about TB and Billy the Kid is that Billy the Kid's mother died of TB.
Yep. Wow. And I'm sure, did we see TB in families a lot just because of the proximity?
Yes. Yes.
You had mentioned with Billy the Kid. I just want to point out for those that you don't know, so Lincoln, where you also
work,
because Lincoln and Fort Stanton are very close, so you kind of go back and forth throughout the week. Billy the Kid was his famous last stand happened in Lincoln. We have done a video where Kent and I went to Lincoln. We took the wagon. We cooked on the most dangerous road in America.
Yeah.
Really cool. Retraced Billy's steps. Go ahead and look back at that video if you're interested. But Lincoln's also a place you can tour and go see the old buildings. I know you do tours there, correct?
Yes, I do tours there in Lincoln.
So that is definitely something for people to check out if you're interested. But let's go into, you've mentioned Fort Stanton. You were at Fort Stanton. Let's get a little deeper into Where is Fort Stanton, and why did it become such a tuberculosis hotbed?
Okay, yes. Okay, so it was, like I said, it was a fort from 1855, and then that lasted until 1896. So by that time, a lot of Native Americans were in reservations, and the forts weren't needed as much. So they were all these abandoned buildings. And it was placed right in front of Sierra Blanca, which is to them like a very like created, like their creation story.
Right. I didn't know that. So Sierra Blanca is
a big mountain.
Is it the highest peak here?
Well, in this area. It's the second in New Mexico.
Yeah, it's behind Wheeler Peak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is part of their creation story.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. That's a whole nother podcast right there.
There you go. Oh,
yeah. Are you coming back? They've controlled that population.
Mm-hmm.
And where are we at, late 1890s?
Yes.
Okay.
1896.
Okay.
So the fort's decommissioned along with some other forts that are around New Mexico. Dr. Wyman, right, he had that study saying, hey, you need fresh air, you need these high elevation. He sent this guy, Cobb. Cobb went out and tried to, scout out locations for tuberculosis, like sanatoriums, basically.
Okay.
And he found Fort Stanton. And he's like, oh, I like this place. We got lots of buildings and they're made out of stone, right? Our fort stands stone. It's a little different than some of the other forts that are made of adobe, right? So we've got lots of buildings, right? We've got the Rio Bonito, right? That's a nice river that flows. It doesn't flow as much anymore, right? But that flows, right, nearby. Lots of land, right? Hey, this is a nice place, right? So in April of 1899, right, they said, okay, we're going to make Fort Stanton a federal tuberculosis hospital. Right? And they made Fort Bayard around Silver City that same year, right? So the Fort Bayard got more of the veterans from the Spanish-American War. But we got the Merchant Marine, right? And that's kind of what surprises people sometimes. They'll come over and they're like, why? You're in the middle of a desert, right?
Why are
the middle of New Mexico? Why do you have this big merchant marine symbol over here? You know?
Yeah. So it began with military TB treatment.
Yes.
When did it expand to everybody or the area?
Well, for Fort Stanton specifically, we were a merchant marine until 1953.
Oh, okay, okay.
When they started to get drugs to help TB, gotcha. And that kind of calmed down. And then after that, we were a state hospital from 1953 to 1966. And we treated a lot of Native Americans during that time.
And TB still specifically, yes. Or everything?
Sometimes we would treat other things too. And Fort Stanton was there as a hospital. So if any locals like needed help, sometimes we would treat local people, right? But mostly tuberculosis. If you haven't been there, right, it is very isolated, right? It is, there's not anything really next to it.
Right.
And so they try to be as self-sustaining as possible. So they tried to grow whatever they could. They'd get some things come in, right? But they tried to, they had cattle. They have we've had a big dairy, right? At the area. Yeah. But it was milk. It was milk, like every meal. You read some of those reports, it's milk and then more milk and then more milk again.
And so, and this was before the cure came along. And so really these doctors who were state of the art, right? I mean, you had the best TB doctors in the country. At Fort Stanton, they're prescribing sun, clean air, and lots of food is basically, and rest.
Yeah, and rest. Yes, and so definitely rest.
That was the big combatants of the 1800s. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's how they would treat it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know there are varying degrees of the patients, whether you were talking about the super sick were in the hospital and then progressive up from there. So what was like a daily routine for a patient that maybe isn't completely bedridden?
Okay, so if you needed more rest, right, you would have more rest time periods. But you had breakfast at 7 a.m. Yeah, 7 a.m. breakfast. And then you had a rest period in the morning if you needed it or if you were prescribed that. Then you had dinner, what they call the dinner, right? Lunch, really, at noon. And then you had another rest period. And then at 4 o'clock would be your supper, right? So you had these three prescribed meals. So you had rest time periods. And then you had to figure out something to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do with 200 people? You can't just, yeah.
Okay. So what they did is they thought if we keep them entertained, right? We keep them happy, right? Then hopefully that will help also heal them. So they built a golf course.
Whoa.
Oh my word. Yeah, you can still go up, hike, and see some of the remnants of the golf course.
Oh my word.
Yeah. And then they built a library. Patients that we have had interactions with talk about how they read a lot or had books shipped to them so they could read.
Well, wasn't there a baseball field out there too?
Oh, there was? Yep.
Baseball teams. Yes, we had lots of baseball teams.
Oh my word.
Horseback riding. Think of the people do today, you know?
This sounds like summer camp. Like,
I know, right?
Let's talk about the cure,
okay,
that did finally happen. I mean, it sounds like everybody was making really great efforts. We're eating well. We're out in the sun, fresh air. Like I said, it's summer camp. We're all happy. But really, ultimately, that's not going to cure tuberculosis. Obviously, now we have gotten to a point we have a cure. What is that? When did it come about?
Well, the major drug that helped was streptomycin, right? That was the one that was invented in 1943. That was what's called a broad-spectrum antibiotic. Basically, it could kill a lot of different types of bacteria, right? So with tuberculosis, science-wise, it's a gram-negative bacteria, and those can be hard to kill, right? So they developed a drug, right, that could help cure it. And so with that discovery, I like to go into kind of how it was discovered. So 1943, right? And they at Rutgers University, right?
Let's, okay, we're going back east now.
right. And there's a woman there named Elizabeth, right? Elizabeth Bougie. And she's working in the lab with this guy named Albert and, you know, some other guys. And
of course, she's probably the only woman, right? What is she the only woman?
I don't know if she's the only woman there, but she's probably, she was a major significant contribution to this discovery. And they thought at that time, hey, you're a woman, so you don't really get to be part of this. They took all the credit. They got the Nobel Prize, right, for this discovery of streptomycin. And Elizabeth was left out until there was a lawsuit. And then she got, 0.2%? Right? And so she fought for that. A lot of the women back then, or at least the thought, like, oh, you're a woman, so yeah, you can be a scientist. But once you get married, once you have kids, right, you're going to go back home. That was the thought back then, right? And so luckily, said she fought for it. A lot of women scientists struggle through that.
Oh, I imagine. When you're saying the streptomycin, is that what it's called? So I can't even imagine the creation of that. I mean, that's huge. Would you say it was as big or bigger than the discovery of penicillin?
Well, with penicillin, I think that's a fun story too. Oh. Yeah.
I love fun stories about penicillin. How about you, Kim?
So back in 1928, right, Alexander Fleming, he went on vacation, right? He comes back to his lab and is like, oh, what's this? It was penicillin.
Yeah.
Right? An accidental discovery.
Right.
And so with penicillin, the problem was that they just couldn't make enough of it. Right. And so they're trying their best to make large doses of penicillin, and they just can't get it. And what was an interesting bit of the story, they say it was a woman, right, again, who brought a cantaloupe from a local market. And that was the key to kind of unlocking these large doses of penicillin. Right. And so we get that going. And by the end of World War II, right, we have it going basically to the armed forces, right? But not necessarily maybe a big mass production. Well, one of the stories at Fort Stanton, right, they not only treated tuberculosis, they treated other diseases too. And this guy came in and he had endocarditis. He had something wrong with his heart valves.
Oh.
And Dr. Rude, right, was like, I think penicillin's the answer, right? I think that could help this guy. And so he writes to the National Institute of Health and says, I would like so many, you know, grams of penicillin, please. And they write back, are you sure? Because we don't have the evidence that penicillin could treat that. Are you sure you want it? And he's like, yes, I'm sure. Please send it. And then 2 days later, right, he got it, luckily, and saved that man's life for another 20 years.
Wow.
Right? So,
you know, when you talk about streptomycin earlier, and that was really the beginning of the mycin family of medicine.
Yes. The penicillin helped lead to this.
And I doctored so many cattle, and, you know, we'd get cattle that had come from southeast down Florida and stuff like that, and they'd get sick, and we called them lungers because they just have this old cough, wheezing cough all the time. And when they come out with terramycin, which was a great drug to treat it with. You could, if calf had foot rot, terramycin. If he had bacterial defection, terramycin. You know, if he thought he needed more hair growth, terramycin. You know, one of them deals, but it was a very thick, syrupy, stinking sort of medicine, you know.
That's how the early penicillin was. Yes, so like a cow pie, they described it.
And it was... always anything in the mycin family back then when we were doctoring cattle was always thick and had a sort of a, I won't say awful smell, but it smelled bad, you know. And if we never had streptomycin, we never would have the health benefits that we have from all that today. It was a great drug, still is.
Okay, so we've got streptomycin was in 1948?
43.
Mm-hmm. And penicillin was when?
It was earlier, 1928.
Okay.
And then penicillin kind of led the way.
Yes.
To these development of these drugs.
So it's interesting. We have two very, very powerful creations that are changing the world. So what's interesting now is I feel like Americans don't have TB on the radar because we have access to the drugs. We are a rich society. Where are these staggering numbers coming from of all these deaths and diagnosis?
It's in areas that have issues with diagnosing TB and getting access to medicine to TB. Those, I feel like, are the major, the cost of some of these medicines, too. Costs and the access of, and it's not just the medicine, it's the just diagnosing it.
Yeah.
Here in the U.S., we had these, at some points, right, little buses that would go around that had an x-ray where you could, so you could diagnose it maybe even earlier, right? But some of these places in other countries, right, specifically, they're still struggling with those kinds of issues.
Given all that the doctors were doing at Fort Stanton before the cure, do you think they got it right? do you think the things and the steps that they were taking before the cure were helping? Or was it just kind of the body responding? Or was it just luck that these people were surviving?
Good question.
What do you think? Do you think Fort Stanton was ahead of their game?
I want to say yes.
Yes.
I think it's always good for your body to get rest, right? To get that sunshine, you get that vitamin D, you get proper nutrition. And and so one of the things that was happening, right in the East and some other places, it was hard to get nutrition, the right kind. Mm-hmm. So your body is already kind of in a state of stress. And then it just kind of could easily keep going down that path.
Well, you're looking at TB in areas of slums, and the slums of New York City, bad water, poor nutrition. Mm-hmm. So yeah, anything a step up that is going to help body recover better, right? So tell me, if I'm a patient there, I'm going through, it sounds like it's pretty structured the way that they have it. Their meals are structured, their entertainment time is structured. Are there any other things that these patients are having to deal with?
Yes. So it's very military-like because, again, it was Merchant Marine, right?
Makes
so
sense.
They had this structure. So when they came to the fort, they had to pass a test, basically, so they understood all the rules, right? Lots of rules you had to follow. So one was a little cup, right? And you had to spit in the cup.
Yeah.
Right? Kind of like a spittoon kind of thing, right? But you had a cup for your tent. You had a cup, that you carry around with you. Sometimes they'd be metal, but a lot of the times at the fort, they'd be paper cups. And so then you could just throw them into the incinerator with your other trash. And so they would incinerate the trash to help spread. So some of these things do really still today help curb the spread of tuberculosis. Sure. One of the rules too, you couldn't pee on the ground, right? Yeah. They thought back then, right, it might spread that way. We know it doesn't today, right? It's more spread, with the coughing.
Oh, interesting.
Then you had to be clean shaven.
Oh, can't.
Shaving.
Yes. What do you think about that?
There's been a lot of stuff that growed in this through the years, cow manure and everything else, but shave their head and everything?
Well, mostly just their facial hair.
Yeah.
That was their facial hair.
A spreading kind of issue. They felt hair
would collect. It would collect it or collect your spit, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to leave mine. I've had it since I was six,
Right.
I think I'm going to keep it.
I've heard about the Lola blankets before. I've seen them a lot on social media, and I've always wondered, what's the big deal? It's a blanket. Well, I got one in the mail, and now I can tell you I know what the big deal is now. The comfort and softness of these blankets just is so inviting and warm. And you just want to wrap in it and enjoy the comfort of it. The only problem is now Kent and the dogs have taken my blanket, so I may need to get another one.
The other benefit of these is that I think they're great for gifts. I'm always trying to find new, kind of unique things to give as gifts. And I think these blankets are going to be amazing. In fact, after I got my blanket, I ordered one for a baby present. And so I thought that was a great idea. These Lola blankets are also machine washable and double hemmed for durability. So there's no pilling, no shedding, even after repeated washings. And here's the best part, because I'm always looking for a deal. For a limited time, our listeners can get 40% off select Lola blanket products with code COWBOYKENT at checkout. Just head over to lolablankets.com and use that code COWBOYKENT, and that's 40% off of your order.
Oh, the other thing they couldn't have was pets.
Oh.
Right? No pets.
Major, to me, you're
like, I know, I'm so sorry. Yeah, but that's an important part of my life. Right? I love my cats. I love my, you know,
I mean,
all
I,
the pets I've had.
I get it. But like, if we're talking about the whole happiness factor, I think pets would have been nice.
Oh, yeah. They cheer me up all the time.
And they wouldn't, that I know, like, pets cannot get TB, can they? Is it a transferable that way? Do we know?
I know that they had done studies, like Cobb, one of the first people there, he had done studies like with cows to see if it transmitted between cows and humans, and it didn't. And that's why he's like, we can do milk and we can give milk to all these people.
Thank goodness.
Right. So really, to me, it from the disease, it's spreading human to human. Right. Yes. And it's spreading mostly that way through lungs, through like your spit or coughing. Yeah. You couldn't drive a car unless you had permission, you know, but you can't do that. So some of the things we kind of take advantage for.
So they were really isolated at the fort.
Yes. You were stuck there.
The happiness factor, the air, the food, those were all more kind of like lifestyle changes. Were there any more extreme measures that the doctors were taking to see if they could get ahead of TB in patients?
Yes. Some of the things that they would do in the hospital, they might remove a few ribs. They might collapse a lung, right? So there were extreme things they were testing out just to see if they could combat the disease.
So it wasn't all fun games and sunshine at the hospital.
Yeah.
What was the death rate, or how many do you know? What was the success rate of people leaving the fort?
I haven't looked through all the reports, but most of them that I've seen and what I've read, about a third died.
Okay.
So two-thirds were released. Now, how long they lived after that, it was kind of hard to keep track of people once they left.
Kent and I first became familiar with the fort because we took a flashlight tour
there. Dark.
So we want to explain to people, the fort is actually still somewhere where you can go, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So we've been a museum for many years. We have 7 buildings that are open that you can go into. And that surprises a lot of people when they come. They're like, I'm used to forts and it's just some ruins. I'm like, no, you can go into these buildings, right? You can't go into all of them, right? But we've got barracks. You can go into the hospital from the 1930s. You can go into the chapel, as we mentioned previously, commanding officers' quarters. Officers' quarters, another officers' quarters.
And a lot of these are set up.
And nurses' quarters.
Like it was, like it used to look, right?
Yeah, we do that. And then but in the hospital, we'll have different rooms that say, okay, this is more about the tents. This room's more about the entertainment, right? Mm-hmm. This room's more about this. Yeah, commanding officers' quarters, we try to put in some furniture to kind of help set it up like how it used to be. The officers' quarters, it doesn't have much. We don't have electricity to that building, right? We're working on getting improvement.
Just like back in the fort days.
Right. Right. And then the nurses' quarters, we have a day room set up. And that nurses' quarters used to be for single nurses. So really, when it started, it was a lot of men, even with the crew, you know, like just helping set up the fort. And then we got women nurses, right, starting to come in, especially I have a lot of pictures from the 1920s. Of them coming in and helping.
When was the last time that it operated as a hospital?
So the federal era, as I call it, was 1899 to 1953. And then we got switched to the state. And then we were that for another 13 years as a state hospital. Then after that, which also kind of surprised people, we keep being things, but that's helped these buildings, I think, stay
intact.
You have to adapt.
Yeah. And so after that, we were part of the Los Lunas training in hospital. And so we helped people with developmentally disabled.
Okay.
And then that lasted to the early 90s. And then in the later 90s, we were a low security women's prison and drug and rehab center.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so the women, when they were there from the prison era, they painted these murals. And so when you go to the nurses' quarters, you kind of look down the hallway or you go on the flashlight tour where you can go deeper in,
yeah,
right, to some of these buildings. You can see a lot of their hand-painted murals of like they did a lot of birds, right, in nature scenes. And then they did some in the hospital too.
That's very cool. So it is an open tour that people can take or guided tours also?
It's a self-guided tour. Okay. Most of the guided tours we ask in advance, and most of those right now are school tours that we do. And we try to get the schools from the local community to come and see the history of the fort.
And then tell me what kind of, I know you guys do events quite a bit in Lincoln and Fort Smith. So tell me what's coming up.
Okay, we do a lot of events. So in July and in August, we have what's called Fort Fun Days. Those are going to be the first Sundays. And so what's neat about First Sunday is that the historical sites throughout New Mexico, right, including us and Lincoln, right, it is free if you have a New Mexico ID to go on that first Sunday, right? So definitely, right, a good time to go if you're a resident of New Mexico. But our ticket prices, I feel like, are not too bad. They're like $7 for a day, and you can go into those buildings. But events, yeah. So the Fort Fun Days, our other ranger on July 5th is going to do a demonstration about how they made paper in the past. I'm going to do a little nature talk on August 2nd. And so I have a little bit of background in like some biology and nature. So kind of teach people, here's some, animals that are around here at the fort. Here's the plants we've got here around the fort. I can show them some of that.
And you have, the way we know it, is the flashlight tour.
Yes.
Which is at night.
Yes.
It really is walking you through.
It's a different vibe.
Yes.
So one of the stories I like to tell, right? My first day working there, it was the flashlight tour.
Ooh, way to get baptized.
It was really cool though, right? I go in there, I just kind of tag along on the tour, but I look up at the end of the tour and you can see the Milky Way. And I'm from Dallas area. And I was like, this is beautiful, right? So not only do I get to go into these buildings and the flashlight tour, you go into buildings we don't normally let people in. You have to sign something though, right? You always got to sign that, right? Waiver. But you get to see like the fort at night, and it's beautiful. There's not that much light pollution out there. So you can just see these beautiful skies. And they run July through October. It's the last Friday of the month. And the tickets will go on sale about 2 weeks before. And you just Google New Mexico historic sites, go to Fort Stanton, and then that gives you more information about ticket sales.
Is there also a Fort Stanton Live event?
Yeah, so July 11th is our big yearly event. Now, back in the day, they used to have a rodeo around July 4th, right? That's another form of entertainment, right? And what was cool with that, too, like a lot of the patients would collect trash, and anything that contractors left behind, sell it to get this money to, like, just give people that kind of entertainment, right? Today, we have a friends group that really helps us raise a lot of money, We have a Fort Stanton Live event July 11th. That's a Saturday. It's an all-day event. So we have things like vendors that are coming in, Native American dancers, lecturers, cannons. That draws usually a lot of people. Yeah. They like to see the cannons firing.
I think what's interesting is that we're talking about this disease that, as you mentioned, dates back to the Egyptians.
Yeah.
A disease that I had thought was an 1800s kind of lore and was eradicated. But it's still something that's very prevalent today, even though we don't experience it every day. But this is a living history at Fort Stanton. Like, right. You can go see these buildings. It's not ruins. You can walk through these. You can learn this history. And it's very still tangible.
Yeah. And then a lot of, you know, like you were saying, Kent, these patients are buried out there.
Yeah.
Mm, you know? And so you can, it's a great place to just, you know, see kind of all the history of these people who were left there.
Yeah. It's a
cemetery.
I mean, I've been through a lot of states and I don't know the history of all of them, you know, but even when I was coming back through here guiding elk hunters in the early 80s, I didn't know Fort Stanton was there. You know, I'd heard of it, but I didn't know it was just right off the beaten path here. And there's so many of these treasures that are off the interstate,
mm-hmm.
that are on the back roads, little bitty places. But it's something that was wrote about in history, something that played a great part in shaping part of a nation. But it doesn't need to be something we forget. It doesn't need to be something that we think, oh, I'm not going to drive 30 miles out of the way to see that. It was a struggle for them. It was hard times for those people. But they passed on a legacy to us to hold it up, to be proud of it, what people accomplished. And if you get a chance to drive through Lincoln, New Mexico, drive on up to Fort Stanton, you will be blessed by that trip, I promise you. There is so much scenery there. But just get out and just sit in the quiet and let it speak to you, because there is peace there. A lot of times there have been tragedies and there have been troubles in life and people have had hardship. If you sit there and you just listen, you can find the peace that them people wanted you to have there. Amy, it was a pleasure to have you, darling. We thank you for the great work that y'all do out there. It is a great thing to preserve history, but also to pass it on. Rest of you, I mean, you see me wearing this old hat. You learned a lot about what part of history the guy that made these hats originally started from, but also how it shaped America and West, and how tuberculosis became part of that man's life, as so many others. And you talk about resilience. We've all got to have it. We've all got to put that foot forward. We've all got to step out into the right place. And we got to make a difference in somebody's life.
You know, tuberculosis is not at our back door necessarily, but it is definitely something to know that the rest of the world is fighting, and to keep that in mind. And if you all are interested, highly recommend this book, Everything is Tuberculosis. Amy, you also read this.
Yes.
Correct.
I enjoyed it very much.
I think it's great just because it's a short read. It doesn't get too in the weeds, but it gives you just a really interesting overall look. And again, how it helps shape the West.
And it follows Henry. So he has this kind of big theme throughout the book.
Yeah.
Yes, just following this character.
It follows a boy who has TB currently and the struggles that he faces in Africa, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, check that out if you're interested.
But as always, it is with great pride and honor and privilege that I tip my hat to all our servicemen and women and all the veterans that have kept that old flag a-flying. We commend you all and we lift you up in prayer daily. Rest of you, thank you so much for taking out a little time just to sit and visit with us. Hey, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure and give us a comment. Give us a 5-star on that Spotify, Apple, whatever your podcast may come about. But God bless you each and every one, and we'll see you down the podcast trail. Pioneer.